From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency.
I'm Mike Hempen, a co-chair of the Broadcast Podcast team. Some of the journalists who were attacked in October 2023 while positioned near the Israeli-Lebanese border say no one has ever been held accountable. The attack killed a Reuters cameraman and wounded six others. Earlier this month, the National Press Club's Press Freedom Center hosted a panel discussion about that incident. Press Freedom Center Director Bill McCarron delivered the opening remarks.
We are here today to discuss a case that occurred in Lebanon close by the border with Israel, and to raise up the profile of the case and to discuss for the first time in public in the U.S. in this way what happened that day. And we have with us survivors of that incident, and we have with us coming in over technology, the Reuters bureau chief who did much of the investigation that took place by Reuters. Others investigated, and some of them are here. RSF, CPJ, the ACLU, but who did not investigate and has not completed an investigation is the IDF, who has not investigated in any kind of proper way the U.S. government or the government of Israel. So we're waiting on an investigation by the IDF. They supposedly are working on that. I would like to use this moment to invite them to come to the National Press Club and disclose the contents of their investigation, and then to have a public event where we can discuss that with some of the companies and the representatives who are here. So I'm not holding my breath about that. And the reason for that is in past cases, investigations like this have not been readily forthcoming. So we're not 100% sure what is being done. We very much hope something is being done.
McCarron said independent investigations indicate an Israeli tank crew on the other side of the border was almost certainly responsible for the attack.
The stated policy of the IDF is we do not target journalists. And it is that stated policy that in some way really caused the people you're going to hear from tonight and their companies to be present in a place they could receive fire from Israel. And I say that just as a matter of fact. It's a policy that is hard to square with reality. When we look at the number of journalists that have been killed in Gaza, which organizations like CPJ say put the number at 170, you can find different numbers, but it's a huge number. And look, we know who's doing the killing, and these are people who are trained to kill. And we know that the material that's being used is material that's designed to kill. So there's not a lot of mystery about what's going on. The question is, how do we stop perpetrating the idea that, when I say we, including everyone here, that journalists will be safe in theater with IDF. And so we think there's a moment right before possibly the return to Gaza of journalists and journalism, and I'll throw in there aid workers, and I'll throw in there also those that are going to be investigating past crimes. You know, there's a moment where we can have a rational and reasonable discussion about this policy and how it conflicts with reality. And I think that's got to happen before we're back to coverage again.
The panel discussion was moderated by Jason Rezaian, who was imprisoned in Iran for 544 days and now is the director of press freedom initiatives at The Washington Post.
I want to introduce the panelists and then just launch into what is a harrowing, heartbreaking story and hopefully inform you all in ways that you can share with your communities, because this is a story that hasn't been properly heard.
Rezaian's first introduction was Dylan Collins, an AFP video journalist who was injured in the attack.
The seven of us that were gathered that day on October 13th to cover the news, between us, we had decades of experience covering conflict, decades of experience working in the Middle East. We took concrete steps that day that were intended to explicitly keep us safe. We set up on an exposed hilltop, visible to multiple Israeli positions along the border. We were all wearing flak jackets and helmets. We all had press written across our chest in capital letters. We felt safe. We felt secure given the context. And so we got to work. We set up live feeds to three international news agencies going live to clients. Audio analysis from my camera showed that an Israeli drone circled us 11 times in the last 25 minutes before we were hit. So the Israelis knew we were there from the moment we arrived. And we thought that was a good thing. We wanted to be seen. We thought that would make us safe. We were struck less than an hour at that site. We were struck twice, 37 seconds apart between the two strikes, direct strikes.
Collins played a video about the attack that he narrates.
My name is Dylan Collins. I'm a video journalist with AFP based in Beirut. On October 13th, I was among a group of seven journalists in the southern Lebanese border village of Al-Mashab, targeted and hit by Israeli tank fire twice in the span of 37 seconds. The strikes killed Reuters video journalist Aysam Abdullah and left AFP photographer Christina Asi with life-altering injuries, including the amputation of her right leg. All five other journalists, myself included, were left wounded. These images are an attempt to show you what happened that day. Here you see my colleague Christina Asi arriving in Al-Mashab, where we spent almost an hour filming a column of smoke on the other side of a distant hilltop close to Lebanon's border with Israel. At this position, we're about 2 kilometers from the border, significantly removed from the smoke. For the next hour, we filmed the smoke billowing. Together, with colleagues from Al Jazeera and Reuters, we had three live broadcast feeds going out to three international news agencies. All seven journalists were clearly marked as members of the press, and we were wearing flak jackets and helmets. We were visible to multiple Israeli military positions along the border, both to our east and to our west. And we were also visible to the Israeli drones constantly buzzing overhead. Audio analysis of my footage that day shows that an Israeli drone circled us at least 11 times in the last 25 minutes before we were hit. We were on an open hilltop, and the Israeli military knew we were there from the moment we arrived. We thought that being seen would protect us. The first Israeli tank shell hit us at 6:02 p.m. It came out of nowhere. I was blown back by the force of the impact and immediately heard my colleague Christina screaming for help. I ran to her and saw the devastating wounds to her legs. I knew I had to put tourniquets on both legs or she'd bleed out. I got down on my knees, straddling her right leg, and began to slide a tourniquet up towards her knee. But before I could tighten it,
I can't feel my legs! What happened? Okay. I can't feel my legs!
You're okay.
You're okay. La, 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 la.
The second strike came just 37 seconds after the first and just meters away from its impact site. We later learned that our colleague Aysam was killed instantly in the first strike after receiving the brunt of its force. The other five journalists were wounded in the second strike. Four independent investigations into the strikes on October 13th by AFP, Reuters, Amnesty International, and Human Rights Watch found that Issam Abdullah and Christina Asi were hit by a 120mm fin-stabilized tank shell manufactured by Israel. The strikes were deliberate and targeted. They arrived just 37 seconds apart, just a few meters from each other. In a subsequent report, Reuters found that the same tank crew opened fire at us with a 50-caliber weapon for nearly 2 minutes after the shells hit, showing that the target attack was aimed at taking out the entire group. Additionally, an investigation into the incident by UN peacekeeping force UNIFIL showed that there hadn't been an exchange of fire along the border for more than 40 minutes before we were hit.
Collins then played a message from AFP photographer Christina Asi, the journalist who was injured and had to have her right leg amputated.
October 13 changed everything. I went from chasing stories to becoming one. Losing my leg wasn't just a physical injury. It forced me to rebuild my entire sense of self as a journalist and as a person. I survived, but this survival comes with a responsibility to document, to expose, and to keep sharing our story that others try to silence. Justice for me is not only about accountability, it's about truth. What happened to us was not an accident, it was deliberate. It was meant to instill fear and erase witnesses. As journalists, our duty is to make sure that the world does not look away. Justice is about remembering and making sure that those who are responsible are named and condemned so it does not happen again. I chose to cover conflict because truth is often the first casualty in war zones. Journalism isn't only about facts. It's about giving space to those caught in crossfires and documenting what others try to hide. We need more than press vests. We need real legal actions, global accountability, and consequences for those who try to silence the press. I am here before you today not as a journalist who survived, but as a journalist who refused to be silenced. And I ask you all to stand with us, because when journalism is under attack, so is the truth. And without truth, there is no justice.
Reuters bureau chief Maya Gobelli was a colleague of Issam Abdullah, the journalist who died in the attack.
The IDF has pledged that an independent body known as the General Staff's fact-finding and assessment mechanism will examine the incident. To this day, despite repeated calls for the Israeli military to make its findings public, we have not received any further information. As I said, Issam was a diligent, passionate, kind, and professional colleague. We miss him every day, and we're really proud that Reuters has announced a fellowship in his name, but we hope that we will never have to announce any future fellowships like that.
McCarran said the Israeli military needs to provide more information about its investigation into the October 2023 attack.
As far as this investigation, I think Reuters has investigated and others. I don't think there is any investigation by the government of Israel, and I welcome them to come here and prove us wrong. We'd love to see what you have developed.
Razayan, who's an advisor to the Press Freedom Center, said the press club will stay on this case.
I learned a massive amount about an incident that I had heard about peripherally, but that should be a massive news story and should have been a massive news story and still hasn't been covered in the way that you guys have all connected the dots here. So I will commit our resources here at the center and my own resources available to me to help you all do that in the ways that I can. But it's an abomination that we haven't done that so far.
We'll continue to follow this investigation and other press freedom issues here on Update One. I'm Mike Hempen. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to Update One, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update One, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.